Hello and welcome to the latest Your Politics, RTE's weekly politics podcast from our team at Leinster House. I'm Áine Lawler. With me today, my colleagues Joe McGraelig, RTE's political coverage editor, Co Ragri Pulatiachta Radio na Gaeltachta, Cúna Sheridan, and Juliet Gash. Juliet, you're just back from Washington, literally off the plane this morning, and you were there for the Irish takeover of Washington's political diary on Tuesday.
That's right, Áine. I was there for the Washington leg of the journey, as you say, the Taoiseach having been in Philadelphia for a full 2 days of events on the Saturday and Sunday. I'm losing track of days here. But he got back to Washington, D.C. in the evening for a reception in the Irish ambassador's residence, which was all very nice and had shamrock shakes and crisp sandwiches. So it was a really interesting trip, and I think people feeling pretty good about it overall afterwards.
Yes, and it is, Cúna Sheridan, you were there last year, and it is a whole day. I mean, we all focus on the Oval Office, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But you start off with the Vice President's breakfast, then there's the Oval Office meeting, then there's the congressional lunch, and then it's back to the White House for the Shamrock and the Hooli. So that is a remarkable amount of time for one country to dominate the political agenda of, you know, one of the biggest countries in the world, especially at a time when they're at war.
It's extraordinary, and you can sense the envy from the journalists, even the American journalists who are there all the time. They don't see anything else like this in the course of the calendar year. And of course, that was an even sharper contrast this year, with so many huge events really demanding the president's attention. I'm not sure he's giving them the attention they might need. And suddenly this whole day dedicated to a country that's not involved in any direct way in the conflict. I think a lot of the American journalists would have found that very strange, very unusual. But I suppose it happens every year. And that's one of the reasons that the Irish government wants to keep it in the calendar.
I wonder, has there ever been so much written about the visit in advance and about the Taoiseach going into the White House in advance as there was this time? Because there was so much coverage of this for the last number of weeks. And obviously with Donald Trump, it's so unpredictable. It's so, you never know what direction he's going to go in, et cetera, et cetera. For Micheál Martin himself, he must have surely been roiled going in there and worried and concerned and all of that. I'm sure Juliet has a good perspective on it from being over there, Juliet, but it just strikes me that it had to be a very nerve-wracking time for all of the Irish party and for all of the officials that were involved as well.
Absolutely. I mean, there was a huge amount of build-up in this visit, what the potential pitfalls were. Last year, it was all about tariffs and where they were going to go. That's still not resolved. But arguably this was, you know, the stakes were much higher. Mm-hmm. America is at war. And a lot of talk around what sort of mood Donald Trump would be in on the day, because we know he can be a slave to his temper, and that if he's in a bad mood, things can go badly. We've seen leaders go in there and be trashed. And there was this recent meeting with Friedrich Merz, the German Chancellor. And there was a lot of commentary on how he behaved and didn't defend some of his European allies. So the stakes were high. And just minutes before that meeting in the Oval Office began, there was an angry Truth Social post by Donald Trump where he lashed out at NATO allies and the alliance itself. Mm-hmm. So you could see the Irish delegation, having seen that post, were nervous. But I have to say, overall, the Oval Office bilateral was polite and cordial. Micheál Martin had mentioned that, obviously Mr. Trump, President Trump, is a courteous man. He kept on saying that point. And, you know, watching it from my point of view, he was courteous. And Micheál Martin got in the points that he wanted to make on trade. That was the big message from the Irish delegation this year, how Ireland is the fifth biggest foreign investor in the US now. And so he made that. And after the initial words, I suppose the focus switched to Iran, because there's a lot of international reporters in that meeting too. President Trump had also lost his counterterrorism chief that morning. Joe Kent resigned, and that had been big news on the US networks. So, as I said, the stakes were high. President Trump was his usual self, you know, very clear. He had to go to war with Iran, he said. He said they were weeks away from developing a nuclear weapon. And eventually, Micheál Martin managed to get back in. Now, it wasn't because he had to interrupt Trump necessarily. He did interject, but he also had to make himself heard over lots of questions being shouted by the journalists there. he made the point, and we knew that he wanted to make this point from comments he'd made beforehand, that Ireland would prefer to see the conflict resolved peacefully. He did mention that that the US was doing, or Donald Trump was doing his bit for peace in the Middle East. Now, that probably could have been phrased better considering the situation in Gaza.
But, yeah, there was a lot of criticism of that in the Dáil yesterday. While I suppose the broad conventional wisdom was that Micheál Martin succeeded in coming out of the White House very well and made some very important points. There was a lot of criticism.
Well, it was a lot briefer, wasn't it? I mean, most of the session was Donald Trump answering questions on the war.
And
I
think it was about 34 minutes of Trump.
He did, Micheál Martin, as the Taoiseach Cohen, stand up for, you know, Europe, it's a good place to live, despite Donald Trump saying it's being invaded by immigrants and it's not the same as it was. He stood up for the war on Ukraine. He stood up for Keir Starmer, whom Donald Trump was lambasting because he's not getting the ships he's asked for all these other NATO countries for. But that question that Joe was raising there, how much of a misstep is it being seen that you're doing your bit in Gaza remark?
Well, I think a misstep would mean that it had been perhaps a mistake on Micheál Martin's part. And I don't think that it was a slip. Mm. I don't think it was a misstep. I think there was a conscious decision made over the last few weeks that the Irish government wouldn't publicly question the US administration's explanation or lack of explanation for going to war in the Middle East. There have been comments about the war not having a UN mandate and so on, but they're not saying what the president is saying and what the opposition are saying, that it's a clear breach of international law. So there was a decision made, a strategic decision made, that wouldn't be brought up in that way in the meeting. But Micheál Martin did question Donald Trump's narratives about Keir Starmer not being Winston Churchill. He questioned the American right-wing's narrative about European civilization basically tottering on the edge of falling apart, and within the American government's mission to revive that or save that in some way by supporting far-right movements in Europe. And he also questioned the narratives on immigration that are quite widespread now on the right wing of American politics. So in those three key areas, and he also actually made the point that Russia had invaded Ukraine, and Trump has regularly questioned the generally accepted version of how that war started. So I think on those areas, Micheál Martin will be quite happy and his European partners will be quite happy. And possibly after November 2027, that particular act by Micheál Martin in the Oval Office may help him with whatever professional future he's angling for.
And definitely got in a line about we'd like to have an arrangement with the United States for legal immigration from Ireland as well, which was interesting. But that said, there has been an awful lot of criticism as well that he didn't give a very strong line condemning the war, that he didn't state clearly that what the Americans are doing are destabilizing the international markets for fuel, causing all this suffering for people. That's the line that was coming from opposition parties here.
And of course, when that question, the points that had been made by President Catherine Connolly, Juliet, was put to President Trump, he seemed to be a little bit confused about our president.
Yes. So one Irish journalist had jumped in with that question about President Catherine Connolly's comments. Now, President Trump couldn't hear her and sort of, you know, pushed that question aside. But another Irish woman journalist came in and said, actually, you know, the president of Ireland says that the war in Iran is illegal. And Mr. Trump said, he's lucky I exist. Obviously, maybe he doesn't know who Catherine Connolly is, or maybe he didn't absorb the question fully. But there was some criticism of Taoiseach Micheál Martin for not correcting the president there, and to say that, well, our president is a woman. But you could see he was awkward. You could see he was having a moment of, is this where I jump in again? But, you know, to take a line from Dan Mulhall, the former ambassador, he was making the point that, look, every leader who's gone into the Oval Office has had to listen to Donald Trump going on and on. And you can only fact check him so many times before things turn sour. So perhaps he thought he'd already done his bit in terms of, you know, raising the war and how Ireland wants to see it resolved peacefully.
That's the thing.
And also, the Winston Churchill comment too, I thought was important to make. So I think he just, you know, took a bet and maybe this isn't the time for this, because he then moved on quite quickly, President Trump did, after saying he's lucky I exist. He was back in on, you know, the Iran war quite heavily, rather than saying specifically those comments are wrong.
And I agree completely with Juliet on that that being probably the reason why the Taoiseach behaved as he did. Last year in the Oval Office meeting, I was actually right behind J.D. Vance's shoulder, so I had a direct view of Micheál Martin, and I could see Donald Trump from the side. So I watched Micheál Martin's body language quite closely during the meeting last year. And the thing is, if you decide going into a meeting with Donald Trump that you're going to correct every single falsity he utters, it's going to be a long meeting. It's going to be a difficult meeting. And you have to pick your moments. Now, there will be disagreements about the moments that Micheál Martin picked. But I think they were very clear and conscious decisions, and they were totally in line with the government's policy.
Bear in mind, this is the first of three events that the President and Micheál Martin were at in the day. So you've got to pick your battles.
Yeah. And was there much discussion, Juliet, about the prospect of President Trump returning the favour and coming here for the Irish Open in September? Not sure. What's Micheál Martin's golf game like? Does anyone know?
It's not good. He admitted that to us. He said he's not a golfer. However, his wife, Mary, is. So maybe she'll play a round of golf with President Trump.
Down in Doombeg.
But in Doombeg, yeah. So that my colleague, Jackie Fox, got in the first question and she said, are you going to, you know, attend the Irish Open? And he was like, oh, you know, I have a great golf course. It's great that we're having this. The usual hyperbole we're used to seeing from President Trump. But he said, you know, I'd like to go. It would be an honour to go and I'll try to make it happen. And the thinking is that he will come in September, but perhaps not stay in Doonbeg, just make it a 1 day visit. So it'll be interesting to see if that can happen. Obviously, the midterms are happening in November, so his focus will be on that. But again, Jackie Fox was saying to me that it really does play well for a president to do these international trips, and he could be playing to his base, you know, highlighting his connections and his, just being abroad and looking presidential and also lording over this golf trip.
And for all he knows about Doonbeg and the golf course and all the rest of it, we found out from that press conference as well, he'd never heard of the snail down there around which there's been so much sensitivity. This, I think it's an Angustior minor is the name of the snail. And it lives in that, on the golf course there. And when they were developing it at the very beginning, it was a big issue to protect those. He's building
a ballroom.
Funny enough, he likes those ballrooms. Yeah. He's building a ballroom now, again in Doonbeg, and the question of protecting the snail has arisen. But Donald Trump obviously hasn't been troubled with those details.
It's interesting, though, Cúin, and the compare and contrast with last year. Last year, of course, Donald Trump was, you know, threatening the world with his tariffs and just issuing decrees as he wanted, left, right and centre. This year, you'd more of a sense of a president under pressure. As Juliet was saying, even his own MAGA loyalists are saying, actually, the only reason you're in this war is because Israel told you to. Iran wasn't actually a threat. You've got gas prices rising at the pumps. You've got his polls slipping, apart from the very severe MAGA loyalists. And he's in a war that appears to have no exit strategy at the moment.
There is a sense in which reality is catching up with him. The tariff conversation last year, ultimately the initial pushback against that came from the bond markets. That was a reality that even Donald Trump, couldn't ignore. We see the physical manifestation, and Juliet would have noticed the East Wing simply gone. It was there last year. It's gone. We're not quite sure. There's no final plan, actually. The ballroom plan is very symptomatic for how Donald Trump operates. There's no final plan. There doesn't seem to be a final plan for this war in the Middle East either, or a clear strategic objective. Just today, Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of War, as he now styles himself, talked about today being a day where they would have bigger strikes than ever. There's a sense that, and Donald Trump seems to say publicly, that nobody ever considered the fact that Iran might try to shut down the Straits of Hormuz. When we've been reading about this for 20, 25, probably even 50 years since the Iranian Revolution happened, that this is a relatively easy tactical maneuver for even a diminished Iran to carry out. So Donald Trump is being pulled in by this, and the high energy prices triggered by this war, triggered by a war that Donald Trump and the US and Iran initiated, that's going to come back to bite the US economy, which is not in great shape anyway, and not fulfilling the promises he made to the people who supported him in his election in 2024.
And of course, the dole came back late this week, didn't come back till Wednesday on account of St. Patrick's Day and everything that was going on around that. We're going to move on and talk about the impact of that war and that's all it's already having on our economy. So, Juliet, thank you for joining us, and we let you go to get some much deserved rest after a busy couple of days. And Joe, let's come back to that, because it's been, I mean, a shorter week, but it has been the topic of the week. What are you going to do about those rising fuel prices?
Yes, and I mean, this has been raised before the St. Patrick's break as well. And then the Dáil obviously didn't sit for a week. Everyone, all the ministers took off. And meanwhile, prices have been going up incrementally at the pumps. We've seen the home heating oil prices going up as well. It was raised yesterday with great vigour on leaders' questions by a number of the opposition parties, Sinn Féin especially. And once again today,
Sinn Féin have a private members' motion,
they had a private members' motion yesterday evening. They also introduced a bill, a mineral oil tax bill, into the Dáil, which was to reduce the excise duty on petrol and diesel and home heating oil. And they were arguing yesterday, just vote this through. This will immediately make a difference to people at the pumps. The government, of course, weren't going to be doing that. And the government position, as everybody knows, has been, we're monitoring events, we're keeping things under review. This may not last that long, so we're not going to take any sudden measures. However, that changed yesterday evening when the Taoiseach finally told the Dáil that they're going to make an appropriate intervention, is what he said, I think was the term, which obviously can mean an awful lot. But speculation is certainly at fever pitch that will be around an excise duty cut. But it's not going to happen until next Tuesday, because he said appropriate intervention, be signed off of the cabinet next Tuesday. In the Dáil today, Piers Doherty was saying that diesel prices have gone up 8 cents overnight. And I know he was saying that they're going to go up another 12 cents per litre tomorrow night. Now, that's him saying it in the Dáil. I have, however, have been talking to one of the representative bodies for retailers and petrol retailers. And he told me that, yes, they have actually, an awful lot of their retail members who have fuel stations have been told by the wholesalers another 12 cents tomorrow.
And Joe was saying there's a lot of talk, Cúin, about the question of excise cuts. Will we see that coming from government? Hints coming from government, they're talking about targeted cuts. They're talking about those who need it most. The Taoiseach did today talking about the fuel allowance and the social welfare system. It doesn't look like we're going back to the universal energy credit or anything like.
Not yet, anyway. And it's interesting, Joe mentioning the 8 cent rise in diesel overnight and the 12 cent rise in petrol and diesel perhaps between now and tomorrow. The Sinn Féin recommendation is for a 20 cent per litre reduction in excise duty. It'll be very interesting to see, does the government do more or less than that next week? In any case, all of these measures are taking place in a context where the price of oil is highly dynamic. It's moving a lot every day. And this 20 cents, 30 cents, 50 cents off the excise for fuel next week, it may dissipate entirely as an economic effect, because the key driver of the price here is the conflict in the Middle East. And there's no sign that dynamic is going to change soon.
And one of the reasons that the price is fluctuating so much, you know, some days Donald Trump says the war is going to be over in a couple of days and the price goes down. The next day, you know, you get an oil facility hit, you get a gas facility hit. You've got Donald Trump very angry now that Israel has been hitting, you know, petrochemical targets in Iran, and Iran has been hitting back at gas stores in the UAE, is it? And all of this means that we don't know whether this is something that's a relatively temporary blip, that economies will be able to absorb the shock with some help, or could we even be looking at something as bad as the 70s oil crisis or the Lehman banking crash?
I think that's why the Taoiseach was so vehement this morning in condemning or criticising the Israeli strike on the Pars gas field overnight, because it's one thing for the transport of oil and gas to be disrupted. That could be restored relatively quickly if the conflict came to an end. But if the infrastructure and the equipment is damaged, it takes a lot longer to get back online. That means you're looking at a raised oil and gas price for the next few, many weeks, perhaps months.
And every one of these events obviously immediately affects the price. You know, you see a change there and then or within an hour or two or three. But from, you know, looking at it domestically here, who's been affected? At the moment, initially, it's commuters who are filling their cars. It's people with who are trying to fill their home heating oil. But what's going to
and
happen?
And hauliers.
And hauliers. And what's going to happen is that the transport cost, the oil cost is going to feed into, first of all, manufacturing of food. It's going to feed into the transport of food from A to B to the shops. It's going to feed into
construction,
cost of fertilizer,
pharma,
all of those
medical
things.
Devices,
so it's going to go
right
across the board.
All of these things. And we learned, didn't we, during COVID, that supply chains really matter. And again, this could all get worse. The Marines are, you know, sailing from the Indian Ocean over to the Strait of Hormuz. If the decision is taken to, for instance, try and seize Karg Island, you could end up, at the moment, there's some oil getting out of the Straits, mainly Iranian, but you could end up with nothing moving.
And that's the difficulty for the government at the moment. The opposition will, of course, and they were doing this throughout the winter, long before the war started, putting the government under pressure over energy prices. They'll continue to do that. The government, and the Taoiseach was clear about this today, is of the view that whatever they do, they have to be able to do quickly. And the second criteria is that it has to be flexible, it has to be adjustable. Yeah. And it's very likely that they will have to adjust it in the weeks before us.
And that's what they did in March 22. One of the first measures they introduced was a reduction in excise duty, but it was time bound and there was a three-stage date line set out for when it was going to be restored again. And I imagine if it is, in fact, excise they cut, it'll be something similar. Yeah. But it's just interesting as well, though, you know, we talk a lot about the opposition putting on pressure and all the rest of it. But I was talking to one minister yesterday from the Fianna Fáil side of the government, and he said, if we don't do something about this, there is going to be hell to pay, because their TDs are getting it from their constituents as well. They're getting all of this, you know, real anger being directed at them. Why aren't you taking an action? Why aren't you doing something? And the government has reserves to can be used.
We see it all over Europe. And if we look even at the political effect of the oil crisis in 1979, it's a big reason why Jimmy Carter lost the White House. Yeah. And then that symbolic switch of taking the solar panels he had installed off the White House roof. God be with the days when it was just about taking solar panels off the roof.
And that's why an awful lot of those European leaders who are meeting in Brussels today, that's why they're so worried about this. Yeah. And they're worried about the impact. A lot of key elections coming up and they're worried. They know from the reaction to the Ukraine crisis.
Yeah. Yeah.
These kind of hikes cost you political support, simple as, and people end up looking for different solutions.
They're in an interesting vice grip at the moment, because if, you know, they don't want to get involved in supporting Trump's war that he started of his own volition, but yet if you ultimately make the calculation, well, what's going to be the worst damage for our economies, it may be that not helping to sort it out could be a worse outcome for European economies.
Only
as well.
Once the kinetic phase is over,
exactly.
Isn't that the great get-out clause?
And there's, of course, the connection between this conflict in the Middle East and the Ukrainian conflict. The interplay between them is quite complex. European countries are very worried that a continuing war in the Middle East may lead to the diversion of essential American equipment to that, and the increased oil revenues that Russia is getting now are also helping to feed the Russian war machine.
And it would be remiss of us not to mention another huge concern, particularly for Ireland, and that's the fact that Israel is now engaging in a war with Lebanon as well, and Hezbollah hasn't been obliterated. It is still managing to strike Israeli targets. You have a bombing campaign going on in Lebanon that is reminiscent of scenes we saw in Gaza, buildings being taken down. I think nearly a million people displaced so far.
Yeah.
Barry Andrews there, MEP for the European Parliament, for his committee. And this is a huge Irish concern, isn't it?
It's huge. And of course, it's been openly said and announced by several Israeli ministers that Gaza is almost like a template for the approach in the South Lebanon. The decision that they've made, the announcement they made that they would destroy key bridges over the Litani River, that makes it look like they don't want anybody Lebanese going back into those areas anytime soon. So that's hugely concerning. And of course, in the middle of this, over 1,000 people have been killed already in Lebanon, and over 3,000 that we know of in Iran. So the human cost, the direct human cost, this is appalling.
Yeah, and in the context of South Lebanon, of course, our Irish troops are out there as part of the peacekeeping mission. The peacekeeping mission, however, ends in a year's time, because the Americans didn't support the continuation of that. So if you put all that together, then you see Israel's coming in to southern Lebanon, destroying the bridges across the Litani River. The peacekeepers are gone from southern Lebanon. You know, you could very easily see a scenario there where Israel may be planning to occupy southern Lebanon for some time.
Coming back home before we go, Cúin, it's been interesting this week, I thought, the whole issue of the SNAs and special classes and the allocation of resources and the explosion in need, certainly very big for TDs right across the board. before the recess. And just looking at the committees and looking at the questions this week, it looks like it's one that's not going to go away anytime soon.
It's not, because it directly affects people in a very all-encompassing way, and they're in direct contact with TDs, and teachers and parents are in direct contact with TDs. The government, of course, pulled the emergency brake on the review that was being announced by quietly to schools through the receipt of letters before the midterm break. 19 million euros extra has been found. There is a review ongoing. Taoiseach referred to it today as an upwards-only review. That means no school will lose an SNA next year, according to the Taoiseach.
It's not a guarantee, though, that need not. Will be met. And that was the question.
That's what Owen Kenny, the education spokesperson for the Labour Party, was looking for in the Dáil today, a guarantee that every child who needs a special place or who has special needs will get that in the next school year. And the Taoiseach was certainly not in a position to make that guarantee today. He mentioned the overall investment in SNAs, the overall investment in special education, how much of a priority is. But I suppose the Taoiseach is probably wary about making another big promise. There have been a few he's made over the years that have come back to bite him, and he will be wary, I think, of making another one in this case.
Yeah, one to watch, I think, Joe.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those classic cases where something that nobody thought was going to blow up like a landmine blew up in a spectacular way for the government. So, I mean, they've completely changed the tune, the approach, but it is an area that's going to remain very, very sensitive, obviously, because education, making provision for special needs, all of that it's a very hot political topic, and it's a very sensitive topic as well.
And especially when we have a Taoiseach who says it's the reason he got into politics.
Yes.
We have a Taoiseach who says he's the one who introduced SNAs in the first place. And it's certainly a big commitment in the programme for government as well. So they're going to remain under pressure on that one. We'll keep talking to you about developments as they happen. But for today, that's the economic lesson over. And we'll talk to you again next week. Bye.